Good evening, everyone. Good day. My name is Pamela Begeman, and I'm sitting in for Marianne Best this evening. She is being 100% grandma with her two grandsons. They're having summer camp at grandma's this week. And so hopefully she's having a joyful time. Maybe even her hair is messed up. I'm sure her house is. And so we hold her in our prayers. This evening, we're going to begin with a body practice as a vestibule for our time in centering prayer, or our time in Lectio Divina. But I also want to invite those of you who don't know about the surprise at the end, the wonderful gazing opportunity that we all get to do at the end of class. So if you haven't experienced that, please stay on for a few minutes and rest in the gaze of our beloved community. So what I'd like to do tonight is to do a breathing practice. This is a very ancient breathing practice, alternate nostril breathing. And research has finally caught up with this ancient wisdom, and it's now known that this practice has a profound effect on balancing the brain hemispheres, on balancing the nervous system. It increases mental calmness. It can even decrease blood pressure and help with bronchitis and asthma. And we're just going to do a little bit of this practice to get grounded in our bodies together before our time of Lectio Divina. So I just invite you to connect with your breath, to become aware of your breath moving in your body, just breathing normally. And connecting with breath in its normal pace. I'm going to take two fingers and put them on the third eye in the midst of our forehead. And then the thumb and the index finger will be used as we place our fingers there to go back and forth. So with your thumb, or if it's your left hand, if you're left-handed, your fourth finger, just gently close the right nostril. Just breathe in 5 times. Keeping the right nostril closed. Just 5 easy breaths. And when you're finished, you can remove the block. And again, breathe just 5, inhale, exhale. And now we'll repeat on the other side, closing the left nostril if you're right-handed, and just breathing 5 times through the right nostril, inhaling and exhaling. And when you've completed five breaths, again, unblock the left nostril and just breathe regularly. Five inhales, five exhales. And when you're complete, we'll now do alternate breathing. And you just want to do this at a pace that is even. So maybe it's a count of four inhale and then four exhale. Maybe for you it's longer, but just keep the inhale and exhale even. So again, blocking the right side, inhaling. And then opening the right side and blocking the left side, exhaling. And then inhaling from the right side. Exhaling from the left side. Inhaling from the left side. Exhaling from the right side. And continuing, inhaling right side. Exhaling left side. Inhaling left side. Exhaling right side. Inhaling right side. Exhaling left side. Last time, inhaling left side. Exhaling right side. Inhaling right side. Exhaling left side. And once again, just breathe normally through both nostrils. Five complete rounds. And just noticing any differences, any sensations. And abiding in that place of rest and receptivity. We'll now move to our time of Lectio Divina. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest in me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest in me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecution, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest in me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Amen. What did you hear? What was implanted in your heart? Thank you, Nancy. We'll start. Oh, Nancy disappeared. If you'd like to share, please raise your digital hand. There she is. Nancy, please.
Thank you, Pamela. I think I clicked it twice. Wow. The eyes of my heart were opened with the combination of the picture and the words, because what I saw was, and if I squint my eyes, I can see it, the green hills are a heart, and the heart has been broken open. And all of those hardships and insults and all of that are in the center. And then God's strength pours over that. And just that opening is where that comes in. And it just was just beautiful combination of the two. So I thank you for this. It's just wonderful.
Thank you for your beautiful reflection. Paco, please.
Hi, Pamela.
Hi.
So I also was struck by the combination of the image and the text today. And it's since hearing Peter's sermon on the weak force a couple weeks ago, I've been thinking a lot about this and about hardships and challenges. And I don't know if it's biblical, but the idea that God doesn't give us anything more than we can handle, that's always really spoken to me. And with that image, it made me think about a few different things. I can, depending on my state and depending on how receptive I am, I can look at that image either with terror, and I can see the turbulence and the challenges of navigating those waters and all the erosion that happens when that water, that immense force hits everything below, and can see it all as sort of tragic, or I can just be in awe of it and have a profound sense of wonder and gratitude for the beauty of it all, and also the appreciation of how all of that complexity and turbulence can lead to something that's really profound and beautiful. I also thought about my own journey, so to speak, and how maybe I'm not going to be the one paddling that particular river and going down that waterfall, but I can, for the time being, I can go down the smaller rapids and really enjoy those. And for those who are better equipped, perhaps they can do something more daring. That's my share.
Thank you so much, Paco. Mila, if I said your name correctly.
Yes, you did. Thanks. I just have the blessed and blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God, has a lot of maybe baggage over my whole spiritual journey. And in the past, it's had so many different meanings. And I just got a glimpse of something that, I mean, just a deeper meaning for me of what the pure in heart means. And I mean, to me, at least in this moment, of kind of when I'm in silence or contemplation and the eyes, all their voices start to fall away, and you're just kind of having an experience of God as just this just what it is, the reality apart from all the eyes mm-hmm. and all those constant voices. And I think my relationship or my perspective with God has been so covered up with all of those eyes over the years that I'm really trying to find out what it really, you know, what really is God. And right now the best I can do is kind of those moments of reality where I just get a glimpse of what we're doing here without all those voices. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
it makes total sense to me.
Okay. Thanks. I'm totally blushing.
Sometimes those glimpses can last us a lifetime. They're so powerful and life-changing. Steve, please.
Well, I was struck with boasting about your weakness. And I think sometimes many of us will have weaknesses, but they're buried. And you can't get to them because you it takes a lot of roles and a lot of scripts and a lot of eyes to kind of spackle that over so that you don't have to face it. So it's almost like foreshadowing of unloading is mm-hmm. when these things come up and then you have to painfully become aware of them. And they used to talk about in living school about the shadow. It's like acknowledging the shadow and its presence. And so you kind of make peace with your weaknesses and you're aware of them and you can boast about them because they are food. They are the substrate to be transformed. So just shining a light on it, bringing it out, I think that's the first few steps.
Amen. Thanks, Steve. Pam, please.
Hi, Pamela.
Hi.
Like Steve, I was struck by gladly boasting about our weaknesses. And it occurs to me that the entire school is such an opportunity in that regard. With our work partners, or with our journey groups, with the classes. And over and over again, we get to see that and admit to it. Mm-hmm. And I remember in the early days in the work class of being so struck by you and all the other teachers and your
scathing self-honesty.
That's it. And I just remember thinking, oh my goodness, you know, if they can essentially bare their souls like that mm-hmm. to this group, it's such an incredible gift. And I found that then when that carries over into my relationships throughout my life, it always bears fruit because I can do that. The other person doesn't always respond reciprocally, but there's a shift yep. in the relationship. And from there, we can go on to a new kind of relationship. And I've opened that door for both of us. And I owe it all to the practice that we do in the work.
Yeah. Yeah. Donald has often said that our environment is very confessional, but it's in a safe and loving place. Yeah. Amen. I'll take one more because of time. So Catherine, if you could go. Actually, I think, Rebecca, you were actually up and then we lost you. Why don't we go with you? I'm sorry. If you could unmute. There you go.
For me, I mean, the part about weaknesses was worth paying attention to me, but for me, where it says, I delight in weaknesses and insults and hardships and persecutions and difficulties. My wish is that I may delight in those things. That to me is very challenging. Mm-hmm. So I think of a story somebody told along the way of Saint Francis of Assisi and another person going to see, you know, knocking on the door of some monastery or something, and they came out and whipped him and, you know, threw him into the snow, and his partner was all upset. He was like, isn't this great? The joy in God's, you know, taking care of us even in these circumstances. And I just pray for the ability to do that.
Mm. Amen. Thank you, Rebecca. And Catherine, we will take you, make time for you.
Okay. I was also struck by the weakness that you find power in your weakness, because I feel a lot of shame about talking about my weakness or someone else's weakness that's close to me around people. But I've been, I must have learned. I think my mom always says you don't air your dirty laundry. Mm. So I have a hard time sharing what's the truth of what's going on with me or someone that I live with. And I've been doing that more lately. And of course, people kind of look at me like, it feels like I'm making them uncomfortable, but anyways, I'm doing it. I'm trying to be more real. I'm trying to say what's really going on instead of actually, quite frankly, sort of lying. Mm. Mm. And, you know, not telling the real truth. So I hope to be more real and more open about weaknesses.
Amen. Yeah, in the work, we often talk about how our work is like backwards land, where the world is often uncomfortable or goes against these kinds of practices. But this is why we practice together in this forum, because this is a safe, accepting place where we know what our aims are. Our aims are to be transformed, to heal in the light. And so this is where we get to practice that vulnerability and be accepted for it and to learn from it. So thank you, Catherine, and thank you all for sharing. And now, Peter, please.
Thank you, Pamela, for sharing and leading tonight and subbing for Marianne. And thank you, everyone, for your sharing and for your presence. I'm going to share the screen here. Tonight, we'll take time to share what the homework meant for you this week, and in particular, perhaps what spoke to you from last week's teaching with our guest teacher, Vincent, Father Vincent. On forgiveness. And so I just want to open up the floor to hear what spoke to you, what was meaningful about his talk to you, and how the homework landed for you, in particular, this second point, this externally considering a person, a particular person for whom you may have accounts, and see how that homework went for you. So I see that Jeff has his hand up right off the bat. And then Gary. Go ahead, Jeff.
Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just wanted to comment on the conversations last week between the question that Pamela asked and the response that Father Vincent gave. That was fascinating to me. And I've re-listened to that segment probably 6 or 7 times, trying to get more out of it. It was extraordinarily helpful, because what it's done is prevented me from having to waste time and energy going through this loop of judgment, recognition of judgment, dropping it, and trying to put myself back in center with the idea that it's already done. You know, unconditional acceptance is unconditional acceptance. And it's so freeing and liberating. And I hate to sound like a project manager, but a time-saving thing, that I don't even have to go there anymore. If I see something and I can recognize it, I can drop it immediately now and say, we're done. You know, God's not judging you, so why should I? It's a waste of my time. It's a waste of my energy. It's a waste of my being. It was an extremely liberating idea. Mm. So thank you for asking the question, Pamela. I appreciate that.
Yes, thank you, Jeff, for sharing so clearly. And I talked to several people this week who also were both blessed and perplexed by Pamela's last second question.
there's still more there that I haven't quite got my head wrapped around, or honestly could agree with. I mean, there were some challenging ideas in there, but it was a fun ride listening to Father Vincent, because he's so articulate. And in his conversation, I caught myself saying, he said the word ameliorate. What does that word mean? I got to go look that up again. So I wrote it down to go look it up again later. But it was this blast of food that I was very grateful to be able to take in.
Amen. I'm grateful that it was such good nourishment for you. Yeah, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could all just go from 0 to 100, you know, and just get to the unitive state where nothing can separate us from the love of God, no account is held. But you got a glimpse, you got a taste of the escalator yeah. or the elevator ride instead of the stairs.
Don't take this the wrong way that I'm there. You're right. You're exactly right. I got a glimpse, and I'll take that for now. So
yeah, well, that sometimes that's all we need. Makes all the difference. So thank you, brother. Gay, please. Looks like you'll need to unmute yourself.
Now, is that okay? I worked this week with the prayer of compassion, which was part of the homework. And it proved to be very fruitful for me in so many ways, so many unexpected ways. I began by looking back through my time body, and that practice itself has been such a gift and such a joy. And I purposely looked for someone with whom I have held some account or other. And I found that person, happened to be a family member. And what I was blessed to be able to do was to observe that I have held some accounts, some resentments against this person for years and years and years. And in looking back at it, I put myself into that state of the woman who was in the situation where this all began. And that woman was way prior for any kind of spiritual journey. That woman was totally asleep. And the other person in this story was asleep as well. So one thing I got to see so clearly was that I created a story around some totally now seemingly insignificant incident. And that story I've gotten a lot of mileage out of somehow through the years. The story has stuck. So I went through the prayer of compassion with this person, and I've done it several days in a row. Something major lifted from my heart, because for one thing, I had not realized the truth of it. It had just gotten kind of shoved back there somewhere and never dealt with, but the story was still alive. So there was a really big release. And then this morning I had another experience, and I went into a quiet place and inside and asked God to provide me with whoever it was I needed to release and forgive or be forgiven. And someone came up that it was a total surprise. So this second person, same story. I was in a very difficult period of my life at that time when this person, I was in relationship with this person, but I created this story around some resentment that I had. What I realized by putting myself back into that woman at that time, that state that Gay was in at that time of her life, I was able to see again that there was really nothing to be forgiven. I was able really to forgive myself. And the resentment that I had against the other person just simply dissolved and disappeared. So my takeaway from this is my particular personality type does not really love dealing with any kind of confrontation. And throughout my younger years, the way that played out was if there was a resentment, it was not dealt with. It was just simply shoved back there somewhere. So it's like I've been carrying around this huge sack full of rocks. And what I'm intuiting from the experience of this prayer of compassion this week is that I don't really need to deal with each and every one of these rocks that I'm carrying in this sack. If I can have the experience that I've had this week and really feel into what this feels like, what the experience is like, then I think with practice that this idea of letting things go in the moment will actually be a reality. Thank you.
Thank you, Gay, for sharing those two clear examples of the freedom that comes through forgiveness and compassion toward others. Thank you. Deborah, please. Go ahead, Deborah, just unmute yourself. Or Don, I guess that could be Don.
Yes. Hi, guys. I wanted to share, number one, my gratitude for all of your support and prayers while I was away. It was palpable and definitely helped me have the extraordinary experience I had while I was walking the Camino Santiago the past 5.5 weeks. And the practice for the month of walking consciously, when that came out the first Thursday of the month, immediately became part of my morning devotion. And the last week's suggestion to walk with divided attention reminded me of an experience I had about the middle of the second week out. And I was very identified with my body. It was in a lot of pain. And the thoughts were, you can't do this, you can't make this, sit down, quit, go home. This is too hard. You didn't practice hard enough for this. And my breathing was short and I was just struggling. I was sweating. I was thirsty. We're in the middle of the road. It was boring. There wasn't much to see. And all of a sudden, I realized that what was happening, I was able to observe it. And all the 2 weeks, I mean, every day leading up, even when I was flying there, I was praying all day long. I had over a dozen prayers that were just shifted in and out all day long, the whole time I was walking. And so the prayers began again, welcoming prayer, you know, all these different prayers. And so as that started happening and the prayers began, I began to notice, number one, the first thing that came was the way, the road itself said, dude, you're walking on 1,000 years of pilgrims where they walked and crawled and on their knees. This is not just a normal place where you're walking right here. And my heart immediately just completely shifted from that negative space into awe. And when that happened, I felt the heart deconstrict and my breath became deeper. So everything, my body had control of both my emotion and my intellectual center. And so the prayers were being directed by my intellectual center, and my body then, when it got relaxed, told how to walk and become in the moment. All of a sudden I noticed the red poppies in the middle of the cornfield I was walking by, one red poppy. And then a red bird flew over the road and landed in a tree that I hadn't even seen. And I was in my, so my moving center began to start raising its awareness. And pretty soon I was aware that all three of my centers were doing their own jobs correctly. And in that moment, the download came. This is always happening. This is always here, especially when you're praying for 7 to 8 hours a day, walking 15, 18, 20 miles a day. And praying, this is always there. And then the idea was, where is this praying coming from? Where is this idea coming from? A higher center, a higher intellectual center and a higher emotional center. And those were, all of a sudden, I realized, part of the second body. And so it was so subtle, the realization, the feeling, because the pain was still there, the tired, the thirst, it was all still there, but it was inconsequential. It didn't have to matter. And choosing my thoughts was key. So the divided attention was happening in all three centers, not just the moving center. And that can only happen when there's a higher intellectual center in charge, you know, running things, telling things how to work correctly. And so that was the big aha. And in that moment of realizing the second body, maybe the fourth state of consciousness, I immediately felt the church, the church community. And I felt everyone's prayers, if they've ever been said or whatever else, with me. And the prayers I'd been saying for everyone at the church and the school and everything too, all met in that moment as well. And it was all just this explosion of joy that was beyond ability to describe. But it all started with just observing the negative place I was in. So I could be grateful for that negativity and grateful for the ability to have something to work with so that I could transform that into this new impression.
Well, thank you, Don, and welcome home. I'm glad you're safe. And it sounds to me like you have had the personal verification of a significant number of work ideas, and you'll never be the same. So thank you for bearing witness to that truth, that the conceptual ideas of the work actually can be personally verified. Thank you. Who else would like to share about the homework or Father Vincent's teaching on forgiveness? How did that land for you? Billy, please.
One of the things that Father Vincent said, I don't remember his exact words, was that, you know, you don't just snap your fingers and forgiveness happens, that it takes time and it's a process. And I really, really appreciated that, because it's kind of been my experience throughout my whole life. It's not, you know, I know when I need to be in a place of forgiveness, but it doesn't just happen just because I know that up here. And, you know, I still struggle with forgiveness for a family member, you know, who's, it's been a very harsh relationship for a while. And, you know, I'm still working on it. I think I'm going to be working on it for a long time because of the trauma that set in because of some incidents. So anyway, that's all I wanted to say, was just, I appreciated him talking about it being kind of a process and taking time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Billy. Yeah, you probably speak for a lot of us that have that sort of dynamic in family relationships. I thought he reminded me of a word that's very useful, that forgiveness is not the same as reconciliation. And I thought that was very interesting, that one can forgive without being reconciled. Sometimes that's the way it is with certain situations, especially family dynamics or past traumas. Thank you. We have time for more sharing this evening, if you wish to share. I'm particularly excited to hear someone who has not shared ever before or rarely shares. We'd love to hear from everyone. Let's go ahead and raise your hand. Jim, please.
There we go. Can you hear me now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mary Ann encouraged me to speak up and say something in the group, which I hadn't done before. But I spoke when I spoke from the heart last week, and the response that I got was not only from Father, but in hearing other people who were sharing the same kind of challenge that I was sharing in terms of reaching out so almost, I'm going to call it desperately, because it's truly, to come to reconciliation. And it was for my own sense of well-being. And what I was left with after the end of the discussion was, this is up to God, and it's in God's time. And the lesson for me is just patience and grace and personal forgiveness coming from me, and to not expect something in return in my timeline. And I felt very affirmed, particularly that others were having that same kind of experience.
Thank you, Jim. Yeah, that's the heart of it, isn't it? Not expecting or demanding anything in return. That's really very beautifully well put. Thank you. And thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Anyone else, please, tonight? Ken, please.
Hey, Peter.
Hi, Ken.
Forgiveness is one of those topics that has kind of befuddled me for many years. I've never felt I needed to forgive people. and I've struggled with that idea, but I just kind of, I guess I've brushed it off. And I've observed a few people where for a period, like I felt completely wronged. And then over time, I forgot what that wrong was. And I was like, well, I guess if I don't remember what that was, we'll just move on and just go back to the friendship. But what occurred to me, so this, as I was sitting listening to folks tonight, I was remembering how over the last couple of weeks, I've seen a lot of negativity coming out of me in work. And I've just been wondering, what is that? What is going on here? And as I've been listening to people tonight, what has become very clear is I've been in this workplace for many years now. And I've tried to leave a number of times and the spirit just keeps saying, you're still cooking, so just sit tight. And what I'm seeing is I know all the patterns. I know all the kind of the recurrences. I've worked with the same people for many years. And what I'm seeing tonight is the judgment that I've been holding on these recurrences of what's what I see just happening over and over and over again. And I just hear the judge not lest ye be judged. And I see now that judgment coming back onto myself, participating in that recurrence. So I just, I'm grateful for everybody's sharing tonight to bring that to light.
Well, bravo. And thank you for your sharing that, seeing a much more subtle dynamic underneath what otherwise didn't appear to be any energy. So thank you for bearing witness to that dynamic in our co-creation of things. We'll conclude with Sharon, please, or Stuart.
Forgiveness has been one of my big pieces of work. There was a lot of things that happened to me early childhood and some later on. And so, you know, I've really done a lot of work on this, not only in the work, but other things. But what I've seen is that even if you think you've forgiven, even if you feel forgiveness, it's still lodged in the body. And until you do the body component, and I've heard a few people talk about the body and that if we can get to the body portion of this, it kind of undoes some of the others, is what my experience has been. There is a lot of violence in the unforgiveness, not only to the other person, maybe mentally or whatever, but to oneself. And so it's Tim used to pinch himself and go, I'm the only one pinching myself at this point. They can't pinch me anymore. And that was a beautiful image of that, because at some point you come to the realization that you're not going to go any further in your spiritual practice unless you deal with this thing. And so there may be some, if the person's alive, you can talk to them about it. If they're willing, maybe they're not, maybe they're dead. And so that work has to be on your own bones, because what I also saw in my work with forgiveness is that I had a piece of a memory. I don't know really all that happened. I only have my piece and my reaction to that event or series of events. And so it calls into question everything. And then even in the moment when something is happening in real time, what is that that I'm reacting to, responding to, having a visceral experience about? So it's big work. It's a lifetime of work. And as somebody said, maybe it was Gay, that, you know, we keep working on that. And so I've seen it recur, like something similar comes around and I've seen it recur. And I go, what's left here for me to work on? Is there anything left here? Sometimes the answer is, I feel nothing about it. I have no baggage on it anymore. Not carrying the rocks up the hill for someone else. I'm, I've undone my bags along the way. But occasionally the body will tell me something, that something came in close. And so it's like a bloodhound where you go, there's something here. And if there's anything left in that little cubby, I want to clean all the edges of it out. I don't want that to clog up my space anymore, because I want to live free. I want to live spacious, and I want to live in the moment. And so it's been, there's a grand amount of work. And some of the work was on the central nervous system itself, because those experiences, those traumatic experiences that we may have had, that I had, were lodged in my central nervous system. The centering prayer is very useful. The divine therapist is fantastic in letting it go. But if it is a thing, if the anxiety is coming up, you cannot deny that. You cannot run away from it. It's time to get to work on it. And so the body practices, the breathing practices that Pamela was doing earlier, I really love alternate nostril breathing, but any kind of breathing work unlodges it. It dislodges it from our systems, and so that we can get to the cellular level and go, I love you, and I really do forgive. And so then the cells can reproduce in a loving and new way. And then none of that matters anymore. And we can see the gratitude. I heard Don talking about how he shifted. And for me, that's like gratitude. All of a sudden, when I move into gratitude for this moment, for the experiences I've had, for even the traumatic experiences, I look at it as major gratitude, because it was like a little piece of sand that I covered up, and then I got a chance to uncover it. And it's a gift again. It was a gift. And the gratitude shows me the grace and the mystery that's all around me, if I could just open my eyes to it. And that's the space I want to live in. And thank you all for listening.
That's so beautiful. I just say yes. Thank you for sharing that wisdom and the journey that you have lived, and so helpful. And you are so right about the body. Next year, we'll be focusing a lot on that. And the good news, one of the things to for all of us to ponder is that we don't just have one body. And that to me is, it's profoundly important as we think about these things. Well, great to hear everyone's wisdom and sharing. What a beautiful community we have. We're going to move now to a very similar theme tonight. That is, in many ways, an expression or one practical way of experiencing forgiveness, and that is through unloading. Unloading oftentimes is a place where we discover that we need to forgive. At least that's been the case in my life. My moments of unloading have sometimes included moments of discovery, the counts I was still holding. So I'm going to go to sharing the screen, and hopefully this will work, because I'm speaking with one device and presenting with the second device. So, yep, looks like it's working. Our master technicians behind the scene. I love this image. It gives a beautiful, positive expression to the notion of unloading. One level unloading to another level. I love that someone noted that it looks like a heart. I think that's really lovely. But the sub-theme for tonight is the dark nights, or that John of the Cross taught about. And so we're coming back to that theme and connecting the two, unloading and the dark nights. So unloading doesn't occur in the teachings of the work. It's not a word that shows up in the work, as far as I'm aware. But other ideas that are related to the idea of unloading, which is a word that I believe Thomas Keating was the first person to apply it to this aspect of what used to be called purgation, and that John of the Cross referred to as the Dark Nights. But Gurdjieff has plenty of teaching, and so do Maurice Nicol and Uspensky and others, that resonate, are in tune with the notion of unloading that Keating develops and that John of the Cross developed. And in a certain sense, you can say that unloading leads to emotional freedom. And Gurdjieff put it this way: this emotional freedom is this being able not to identify with the external manifestations of others. Being able not to identify with the external manifestations of others, wouldn't that be great? And, you know, with some people, we may be able to do this, and then other people really trigger us. And so we see there's still something more in us that perhaps needs to be unloaded or could be unloaded. So we might be more emotionally free toward them. Everyone is a mirror. Everything that is occurring is a mirror and gives us the opportunity to work on ourselves. Gurdjieff understood the body, and is really his concept of unloading, I think, is closely related to his movements, which is a kind of sacred dance. And many of you are familiar with this because you've done it. But in my own experience of the movements, the 20 or so movements that I've done, exercises that I've participated in, which isn't a lot, but most of those 20 experiences, I had some form of unloading occur during the movements, that my system was so overloaded and pushed to the limit, because it involves all three centers at the same time, that it almost kind of went into a fight or flight mode, and all sorts of different things came up over the period of time I was doing the movements. Not in an expressive way, you know, no one would have known it most of the time, but perhaps someone would have seen that there were tears coming out of my eyes, or something was happening in my body, a sensation. So Gurdjieff really understood the role of the body, and each of these particular expressions of movement was to do something, and moving the energy of the human being. Something to ponder, and also a plug for the movements. We'll be resuming this fall at the church. Now, in the tradition of the work, we have Maurice Nicol, who was a trained psychologist and doctor, really a protege of Carl Jung. And he gives us in the commentaries again and again many expressions that connect the psychological dimension with unloading, with Keating's idea of unloading, and that the work in this purification of the emotional center is a kind of unloading. And he writes this in one of his commentaries: the peculiar characteristic of negative emotions is that they go on and on by themselves, always creating fresh negative emotions long after the first cause is removed. And they take so much energy and waste it uselessly, so that people often become ill as a result. And this is pretty much what Sharon was just talking about in a certain sense. And so unloading is the remedy, or emotional purification of the emotional center is the remedy for this kind of gunk or emotional residue that builds up over the course of a lifetime in our bodies, in our emotions, in our thoughts. In the tradition of AA and other support traditions for different social and human disorders that people struggle with, Rami Shapiro has written a wonderful book entitled Recovery. And he puts it this way: I don't want to stop feeling. I want to stop being driven by my feelings. And in many ways, unloading, the process of unloading, enables us to stop being driven by a particular feeling that we might have, or a particular emotion that might run on our system consciously or unconsciously. And so this isn't about becoming, you know, unemotional robots. It's about becoming free from our emotions, and unloading is a process by which that can happen. Thomas Keating, who is a beautiful being who has modernized John of the Cross's teaching, he writes that the consequences of trauma, the consequences of traumatic emotional experiences from earliest childhood are stored in our bodies and nervous systems in the form of tension, anxiety, and various defense mechanisms. Ordinary rest and sleep do not get rid of them, but in interior silence and the profound rest that this brings to the whole organism, these emotional blocks begin to soften up, and the natural capacity of the human organism to throw off things that are harmful starts to evacuate them. That's a beautiful paragraph. It's worthy of just really pondering that. And it's in the email. I encourage you to come back to it and look at it, because it really summarizes the whole shebang of what we're talking about here in terms of unloading. And so what is it that needs unloading? And for many of us, unloading can be a long-term process. In Keating's language, he talks about things that get unloaded are programs for happiness, a false self system. In the work language, identification with certain things, our sleep or a state of sleep, negative emotions, negative thoughts, unconscious reactivity, our multiplicity, our imaginary I, the buffers in us, violence, and so on. All of these are just examples of what needs unloading and freeing more and more in our lives. And both Thomas Keating's teachings and the work summarize this what it is that gets unloaded very, very well. So as it relates to the question, how do we experience this freeing, this unloading, this emotional center purification? Father Thomas's concept of unloading, you can just think of this as John of the Cross's knights. That in essence, Father John of the Cross's concept of the knights, knights of sense and knights of spirit, were a 16th century way of talking about the psychological experience that Father Thomas Keating updated with the term unloading. And it's just useful to think of it in that shorthand way. The dark nights are unloading. Now, Father Thomas Keating, in the videos that we have linked on the email today, and I really encourage you to watch those. It's about an hour's worth of watching, and they're very good. If you're going to start with any of those videos, I recommend these two. Very helpful to understand these concepts. But it's not in Keating's system, in the spiritual journey of Christianity, it's not unloading for the sake of unloading. It's a part of the process that's moving us deeper and deeper into God, into the love of God, into the life of God, of being transformed from self into I, not I, but Christ in me, as St. Paul put it, that the fullness of Christ might dwell in me, that I might come to the full maturity or full stature of Christ. So there's actually a movement toward a destination of becoming, not just being. In the work, being is very important, capital B, being, but we also are becoming. And we don't want to ever lose sight of that other concept of becoming, which puts it on that evolutionary, developmental moving towards something, that our growth is ahead of us or beneath us, deeper into us. And you can see here in just this simple little diagram that comes from Father Thomas Keating, that he begins with the night of sense, then he moves to the night of spirit, then there's this transforming union, then the night of self, and then this state called unity. You can think of these things on the left as states or processes, and the words over on the right are more of how it occurs or what it brings about. And I'm not going to get into those right now, except I do want to just point out this last word here, theosis. And he describes this as the state of unity. And you could say oneness too, that would be just fine. But the state of being transformed into Christ. And notice he also hints at what Bernadette Roberts teaches about in terms of the death of self or the loss of self. And he calls it the night of self. And I can't recall Thomas Keating really going much deeper into that in terms of any of his teachings. But I think it's wonderful that he included it in his schematic there in the videos. And it's very useful to see that something of the self drops away so that this process can come to its full completion in the oneness that Bernadette Roberts talks about in terms of the death, resurrection, and ascension experience. And so that's a spiritual perspective, and I don't want to go too much further into that, but I wanted to just bring that out. The whole process is moving toward something, not just unloading for the sake of unloading, so one is more free. Very quickly, we'll go through the characteristics of the night of sense. And the night of sense is preparatory, you might say, the first movement of spirit, and the first movement that leads us to unloading. And according to Thomas Keating, the night of sense is the time where we experience the beginning of the healing of the false self system, the dismantling of the energy centers and programs for happiness. They don't go completely away, but we begin to find that they're not the only power at work, so to speak. They're not, that we begin to see them. This is really the process of self-observation and non-identification. And then there's an attraction to deeper prayer in the silence. So many of us early in our spiritual journeys are in the night of sense, or having moments where we come into the night of sense and come out of the night of sense. And it draws us into Lectio Divina, and it draws us into contemplative prayer. And this is happening oftentimes without us even knowing it. And there can be ongoing, long-term unloadings happening here during this period of time. And I remember in college, for me, I started to have physical symptoms that were, now looking back, I now understand them to be a type of psychological and spiritual unloading. And the physical symptoms were almost all psychosomatic, because after multiple tests, they couldn't find anything wrong except the symptoms persisted, primarily related to a sense of choking in the throat and heart acid reflux and significant sharp pain in the lower back. And there was zero things wrong with me. But this persisted throughout my four college years in downtown Chicago, and then started to subside and completely went away later in my early 30s when I had a spiritual experience and then began yoga practice. And that energy completely moved away and has really never come back. So some things persist and take time, sometimes years, to be unloaded. And so this process of the night of sense can oftentimes take some period of time for us, especially if we don't have a regular practice of meditative prayer. And most people don't have a meditative prayer practice in this phase of their spiritual journey, because they're not drawn to the silence. It bothers them. The silence bothers them. It's too difficult to sit in the silence. But that starts to melt away. John of the Cross described this classically as the time where we feel God's absence. It's the diminishment of pleasure in spirituality or practices, especially prayer. You know, you used to love the Bible, you used to love to go to church, you used to love singing, and all of this pleasure goes away. It's dry. It's a sense of boredom. It's a sense of dullness. He called it periods of dizziness, where you had significant sense of loss of God's presence and increasing doubts that God exists at all. And this is a very common experience for many people. All of this is a part of the unloading process of letting go at the subtle level and experiencing more of God in the darkness. That's the night of sense. The night of spirit is a little bit different, and you can begin to see the contrast and how it shows up in our lives in different ways and how unloading shows up in different ways in the night of spirit. My intuition is that the community of the Church of Conscious Harmony and the Journey School is full of a lot of people who are having experiences of the night of spirit from time to time. I think our community has more folks experiencing night of spirit stuff than night of sense stuff, just by nature of the developmental frequency that happens earlier in life. People enter into the night of sense for many people. And then later in life, as things unfold, they enter into the night of spirit. Although there's no particular rule in terms of time frames for people. But in my general experience with the church, this is a church or people who are either in the night of spirit or have moved through the night of spirit. And many people have moved through the night of spirit. And so we don't find people experiencing some of these things in the church as much anymore. And what are they? It's the complete healing of the residue of the false system, Keating says. This is the fine sandpaper that God uses in our lives to literally clean out all the residue of the false system, and the healing of the residue of our cultural conditioning. A lot of the values and the conditioning that is formed in early childhood and whatnot start to become completely passive. And this is exactly what the work describes as making personality completely passive. And this is also where we experience the purification of our spiritual temptations. So in the night of the spirit, what ends up happening is people start to have great spiritual insight or wisdom get activated. Other spiritual gifts like leadership or apostolic types of callings, like to serve the poor or start a mission to children, or all sorts of things throughout church history that people who have been touched by this night of spirit, they get filled with spirit, so to speak. And then the night of spirit comes along and purifies them of and enables them to do their mission or their service in a way without self, so to speak, and makes them, as Tim Cook used to say, street legal. And that purification of the spiritual temptations, very interesting how Thomas Keating goes into that, talking about these spiritual archetypes that are out there, such as a guru. And the night of the spirit burns away a lot of that to protect people from going into inflation and self-grandizement, this sorts of things. Emotional freedom is a major quality that happens in the night of the spirit, that one becomes free from the domination of the emotions. It's the traditional term apatheia. It's not that you're not loving or caring. It's just that you're unmovable, so to speak, that the emotions are not leading you. The horse is not leading you. The master is driving the carriage. Attraction to deeper prayer and silence is a fruit of the night of the spirit. This is the place where people are birthed into the contemplative tradition in earnest. They can't go back. They need the silence. They need to take retreats. They need solitude. And then finally, it is a place where many people are then drawn to share the love of God with others. And they start to live for others and giving of themselves deeply. All of that are fruits and also experiences of the night of spirit. And John of the Cross simply describes it in four ways as a place, a time where we experience a deepening poverty of spirit, spiritual dryness in various ways, knowing by unknowing, thus the word night, and a total letting go or total surrender. And those are some of the ways he talked about it. So these are the characteristics of the two nights. I'm going to stop here and just come back to the homework in just a moment and see if anyone has any comments or questions. Just go ahead and raise your hand. Looks like Pamela has a question or comment.
Yeah, not a question. First of all, I want to also verify in my own experience what you shared about the psychosomatic manifestations in the body. And I remember the exact same thing. As my life fell apart, so did my back. And what does the back represent? But like the, you know, what holds you upright? And as my scripts disintegrated, so did my back. And the important that the work talks about in three-centered work, that the to be included to help move that energy, ground that energy, heal that energy as it's passing through. And the other thing that I experienced, and I think it's important to point out, is it feels like you're getting worse. It feels like, you know, I'm finally pointing my life in the right direction. So why does everything feel like it's chaotic? Why am I so angry? Why am I, you know, not very nice anymore? And again, backwards land. It's actually showing that things are healing. You know, a wound has to bleed before it scabs over and starts to heal. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Pamela. Yeah, I sometimes refer to unloading as shrapnel, you know, coming up from old wounds. So thank you for that. And you know, every living system has some mechanism for elimination. And unloading is our mechanism for psychological elimination, letting the toxicity of unworkable things out. And that is so physical. It's just astounding. Anyone else have a comment or question for the benefit of our community? Are we all unloaded? One of the things, as you're pondering whether you'll share or not, I'd like to just conclude with one other thought, and that is that I think death is the final unloading. That, you know, everyone dies on this planet, and whether anyone has done any unloading in their lifetime consciously or done any spiritual work, in my experience dealing with people dying, in various contexts, unexpected dying and long-term, you know, people who knew they were dying for months and months in advance, car crashes and whatnot. My experience is that everyone unloads at death. Sometimes it's beautiful. It's extraordinarily beautiful. And other times it's so, so painful to see. You'd want to unload before you die. But no one gets out of here without unloading. And that really is truth, I think. And then another idea, just to ponder, the work, you can think of the two hands of God. The work is in a certain sense the right hand of active work in our lives, where we are actively with various ideas, groups, and whatnot. We actively work on making personality passive, and the work is an effort. In fact, in the raw Gurdjieff traditions, disconnected from Christianity altogether, the raw Gurdjieff traditions, a significant amount of development of will, all sorts of exercises to develop one's will. So the work is the active part, and centering prayer is the passive part. And so unloading as an aspect of centering prayer is much more on the side of grace, and the work is much more on the side of effort. And so they go hand in hand in such a beautiful way, which is one of the strengths of our community. Any other comments or questions before we conclude? Okay, I'm going to go back and share the screen for our homework for next week. In particular, there's some reading invitations and then also some watching invitation, but self-observe and see if you can articulate to your journey group or your work partner or to the group next Thursday night, without much story or details, an experience of unloading. See if you would be able to do that. And then perhaps if you're experiencing a dark night or experiencing an unloading, take time to journal about it. What are its characteristics and how is each of the centers involved? study the experience inwardly, and what do you discover? What questions arise, and what insights come? And just for extra credit, you know, it's not on there, but it is in the email. What might the downloading be? We've talked about unloading, but in my experience, you know, it's almost in proportion to what gets unloaded. God always blesses us with downloading. And so they go in so many ways hand in hand, not always sequentially in time, but in my experience, to the degree we unload is the same degree we get the downloads in different ways in our unique particular charisms and gifts. So thank you everyone for being here, for your love for God and for the work. And Pamela, back to you.
Thank you, Peter. And may we each take what has been downloaded into our hearts and let it become a ferment for our work this week. Amen. So let's affirm together the prayer of God's love. God's love has always met and will always meet all our needs. We give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed we are to simply remember God. Amen. Protect us, Lord, as we stay awake, and watch over us as we sleep, that awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace. And may God grant us a quiet night and a peaceful death. Amen.